let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some art.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts, proudly brought to you this August by the Dolphin Theatre. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz or find us on Spotify. On the show tonight, we're talking theatre, writing and dance. But to kick things off, here is Emma Kate with her new track, Chemical.
I want you more than I've ever wanted anyone before in my whole life. I'm never sure about anything, but you're the cure. I'd give up all my time to be in your embrace. Lips locked, don't stop the clock, or I'll lose control. You know how I fold. I'm weak, too deep, can't sleep, and the room is cold. It feels chemical. Intertwined. You make everything make sense in my wild mind. You made all the stars align when our lips locked. Don't stop the clock, or I'll lose control. You know how I fall. I'm weak, too deep, can't sleep, and the room is gone. It feels kind of
was Emma Kate's new song, Chemical. Sorry, just had a little moment there of going, oh, what was that noise? It jumped to an ad, as it always does. I'm back at the board today. So I'm here by myself. No Adam, no Stephen. I'm back controlling the board. So, you know, I'll do my best to make sure I push the right buttons. So we're going to kick off straight into things tonight. I've got our next guest on the line already. I'm pretty sure she may have just arrived up here in Tamaki Makaurau, or she may still be down in Ponaki. But welcome to the show, Bea. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Emma.
Now, are you here in Tamaki Makaurau?
No, I am still down in Tamaki Makaurau. I'm still down in Wellington.
You're down in Wellington, and when do you arrive up here for the show?
On Wednesday.
On Wednesday. So we're talking about all things colouring with Colour Me Cecily. So tell us, what is this show all about?
Well, so it's about a woman who moves to Upper Hutt from London in 1984 following there's no such thing as a good divorce, a pretty bad divorce. And she sort of slowly rediscovers who she is, makes a good group of friends within the community, quite a colourful, eccentric group of characters, and she is lured into the wonderful world of Colour Me Beautiful.
Right. And is this based on a factual story, or is this a...
No, not at all. It's pure fiction.
Great.
And then obviously parts of it are influenced from my life and people that I knew. I grew up in Upper Hutt. My mum's from the UK, my dad's from the US, so there was certainly always that slight sort of fish out of water experience, but it's fiction, complete fiction.
And were you born here in New Zealand or did you start life?
Yes, I was. I was born in the very deep south in Invercargill.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm a Dunedin girl, so I know what it's like to be the way down there.
Excellent. Yes.
So tell us, what is your role? Because you've got a few hats on in this project.
Yeah, so I wrote the play. I'm performing it and I'm producing it.
And it's a one-woman show?
It is, yeah. Yeah.
So, and is this performance up here, and it's not the first one up here in Tamaki Makaurau, is it? You have performed it down there?
No, this will actually be my sixth season of it.
Wow.
I first did it at Bats back in 2018, and then I took it to Sydney Fringe. I've done a season of it at the Douse out in Lower Hutt. And then I took it down south to Christchurch in Dunedin. I did a season of it at Tahi. In 2022, and yeah, this will be number six.
So what do you do as a solo performer who's producing, etc., to keep it fresh if you've done it, you know, each time you do it? Do you change it up? Does it change or does it pretty much stay the same?
Not huge. I mean, I haven't been doing it solidly for 7 years, obviously. So, I mean, I've had gaps, and each time I come back to it, I sort of make new discoveries and you can dive a little bit deeper, and the more you know the material, the more bone deep it becomes, and you can really inhabit that world that you've created rather than sort of skimming over the surface of it a little bit more as you do in those early stages.
And have you got a critical outside eye that comes to help you so that you can focus on performing?
I have a wonderful director in the form of Hilary Norris. She is an absolute national treasure. Yes, so she has directed each production. You may be from Dunedin, you may well know.
I sure do know Hilary. I've known her for a number of years, yes.
Oh, there we go.
But definitely, like you said, a national treasure. So what's the biggest challenge, do you think, when you take a show to a different venue?
I mean, probably in this case, I only know a very limited number of people in Tamaki Makaurau, so it's always a risk when you don't have sort of a built-in audience base. When I took it down to Christchurch in Dunedin, I have, you know, more people than I know there, so there's the risk in terms of will I be able to generate an audience. Probably, I mean, I guess another thing is you're going into a space sight unseen, so that is quite... and I have 3 hours in the space. The nature of this kind of work is it's a fairly quick turnover, so it's literally you hit the ground running and off you go.
Remind us, which part of the Q Theatre are you performing in?
So we are in the loft.
Right, which is a great space to perform in.
So I'm told.
Yeah. No, I've been to many a show there. I mean, it's a very generous space in comparison to, for example, their little vault downstairs is teeny tiny and very squishy.
Right. Nice. Yeah.
Fantastic. And tell us, what do you want audience members to get out of this performance? What do you hope that they're going home thinking?
That's a really good question. I hope that they will be moved, that they will be entertained. I feel that it's a really relatable story in lots of ways in terms of the themes of friendship and self-discovery and self-recovery. I hope that they just come away having an uplifting and enjoying an enjoyable night at the theatre.
Fabulous. And how long is the production?
The show is 1 hour and 5 minutes.
So it's a nice amount of time to pop in, you know, and doesn't take up the whole night. You still get home early.
Absolutely. Or you can stay and watch Hea Māori afterwards. It's a double bill season at the Loft.
Great. And are both of those being part of Tempest? Is Tempest helping produce both of those as well?
No, so Tempest is just me. So Ihaka, I'm not actually sure what his production company is called.
That's
sorry, but
that's fine.
Yeah, they're separate, but we'll be sharing the space. So hopefully we can support one another and get a bit of cross pollination in our audiences. And I understand he's got a fabulous show. So
great. Yeah. So anything planned after this trip up here to do this stint of the tour?
Not specifically for this show. I am doing some writing. I'm working on a one-woman musical, so I'd like to dive a little bit deeper into that. And
are you writing the music as well as the script?
No, just the script and the lyrics. I have to find a composer yet, so that will be that'll probably be the next task. Yeah,
cool. All right, well, tell us, where can people find out more about this production coming up, Colour Me Cecily?
Sure. So if you head to the Q website or follow Q on social media, also if you have a look at my own Instagram link, which is Don't Dream It, Be It, B as in B-E-A, my name, or Tempest's Instagram, which is just Tempest, nice and simple.
And you can also jump onto the Kick Arts event page because it's on there as well.
Fantastic.
That's great. Well, we wish you all the best for your trip up here on Wednesday. The weather was playing itself, was, you know, okay today. It wasn't as wet and windy as it was last week. So hopefully you have a nice trip up country. And I hope everything goes well at the queue and the season is everything you hope it is going to be.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks, babe.
All right, bye.
Wow. I've always wondered what it would be like touring a show and doing it multiple times. I'm not quite sure if I've got the patience. Or I don't know if patience is actually the right word for it. But anyway, moving on to our next guest. My brain's a bit fuzzled today because unlike our next guest who's been rehearsing all day, I actually flew back from Melbourne where, as we'd mentioned last week, I was shooting across for the Junior Theatre Festival in Melbourne. And so we had about 1,000 kids and teachers and parents there performing Broadway Junior, and I had the joy of adjudicating that. It was a great weekend, but I have to admit, it's the flying always takes it out of me. But let's jump on to our next guest. So coming to us from the studio this time, it's nice to have a live person here with me, from Titirangi Theatre, and their next production is their director, Catherine Fausti-Jensen. Kia ora.
Kia ora, Emma. Thank you for having me.
No worries at all. Now, you're doing a show that I actually hadn't heard of. So tell us, what is The 53rd Victim?
Thank you. Yeah, The 53rd Victim is written by Pip Hall. It's a New Zealand play. And it's the story of a New Zealand woman's involvement in the 2005 London bombings. So this year marks the 20th anniversary of that terrorist attack on London. And a true story, a New Zealander was involved in the bus explosion in Tavistock Square. And she was subsequently hailed in the New Zealand media as a hero who boarded the bus and helped victims. And shortly after that, she was, her life basically after that story came out, her life sort of unravelled. So the play explores what happened and why.
So any reason why it's the 53rd? Were there 53 victims?
There were 52 victims in the London attack and shortly after she became the 53rd.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So how did you get introduced to this play?
I was looking for plays to direct, and so my first stop was Play Market's website and had a look through, and I've always really liked Pip's writing. I've read a few of her things and seen some things as well, and I hadn't read this, so when I picked it up and had a read through, I was really hooked. It's such a compelling story. It's based on a true story. As the story unfolds and the truth kind of reveals itself, it's more and more fascinating and compelling. So by the final scene, when I read some of the reveals, I was like, oh my God, I did not see that coming. So I was genuinely excited by some of the fantastic storytelling that Pip's crafted.
And how many people in this production?
So there's a cast of 8, but there's actually a character list of 37.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. So lots of multi-roles.
Lots of multi-roles. So we have an ensemble of 6 actors who are playing anywhere between 4 and 8 characters, and 2 primary characters. So Rachel, the main woman, Rachel Brooke Taylor, and then her boyfriend, Michael. Yeah.
So when it was coming to audition time, knowing that they had to multi-role like that, what were you looking for? Like, yeah, what were you sitting there thinking?
Yeah, great question. I was really looking for people who were really agile on their feet and really responsive to what was happening around them, and who were then, when I would go, okay, great, now can you play that actor, or play that character rather, who were then able to offer something different. So who were really providing differing, contrasting characters within a matter of 4 lines.
Yeah, because you can't always rely on, in multi-rolling, the change of the costume.
No.
You know, you need to have a full physicality and
100%
accent. Or,
and the cast have been working really hard on that in terms of them defining their physical behaviour, their accents, their voice work. So really trying to define, because there are some key kind of ensemble figures, who characters who appear again and again, and then there's some who just sort of come in once and disappear again. So in terms of some of those ensemble characters who repeats, you know, some of that physicality, that voice work's really important to differentiate themselves from some of the others. Yeah.
Now, I'm imagining a little bit of a crazy backstage atmosphere going on. Are there lots of quick changes?
No, there aren't actually, or the few. I'm out the front. I'm not backstage. So if they're crazy and quick, I'm not seeing them. But when they come on stage, it's all very seamless. but they're actually working too hard and too fast and too busy to be sort of crazy backstage. It's you know, it's fast moving show. Yeah.
No, I was just wondering how many dresses you have to have backstage to make sure they get on in time.
Well, they're all wearing really kind of, I suppose, what I might call everyday, everyman costumes. It's jeans and a t-shirt.
Great. Yeah. Okay. Cool. So, when did you start this project? Like, when was it that you picked up the script? How long ago?
So, it was well over a year ago now, when I reached out to Te Rangi to say I'd like to direct a show. They said, come to us with an idea. So I went on a little bit of a hunt. This would have been around about beginning of winter last year. And their play selection committee works around about this time period. In fact, they're in process now of determining next year. And then I got a phone call, I think, in August to say, would you like to do this show in this slot? And that was super exciting to get that call. And so, yeah, it's been since then, since that call, I'm like, oh, right, that's actually happening. Let's focus. So it's been in my head for a year.
And is this your first time with Te Rangi?
It's my first time directing at Te Rangi.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've been in shows there before?
I was involved in Romeo and Juliet last year in the cast, and was production managing James and the Giant Cody Tree Christmas panto last year.
Right. And so that was the time I actually made it to stage.
Yes, I must have been their lucky charm.
Must have. So what is it about Te Rangi that made you go, oh, I'd like to direct here?
Oh, there's a great vibe about that place. The people I've met are just, I've made really good friends, and that's really special. And people I see now socially as well, like, it's a great community there. People are welcoming, people are open, really friendly people. There's a genuine sense of camaraderie in that place. Yeah.
So where have you directed prior to this?
Oh, well, gosh, not since university days, Emma. So I haven't directed before.
So what's been your biggest challenge, do you think?
The design side of things is probably where I've done the most amount of learning. My background is acting. It's what I love to do. So working on the stage with actors, that's my happy place. When I talk with designers and think through design concepts, that's the area that's really had me having to stretch myself, really go outside of my comfort zone. But that's really exciting too. And happily, I've managed to pull together an absolute A-team of designers. Rachel Walker, Sean Lynch, Duncan Milne, I've just got some champion people around me who are just guiding me through. I'm learning so much off them. So that's a really exciting process. Having some wise counsel.
Yeah, I've always found there's definitely a knack to, you know, you can see it in your brain often as a director. You've dreamt the scenes, you've dreamt the look, you know the feel, but trying to get that out descriptively in a sense that, because, you know, there's a kind of different language often with tech people as well, isn't there?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It was really great when I first started talking with Rachel Walker, who's the designer. She and I were conceptually very early on the same page, and that was really exciting. I knew conceptually what I wanted to present. It was playing around with, you know, with truth, reality, what's real, what's not, and how I wanted to kind of present that. And Rachel was on the same page, and then she just took that concept and just kept rolling with it in ways that I had never even conceived of. That's been super exciting to watch play out.
I think that's a huge part of a director's journey is also, you know, early career directors often want to be over everything. And I think it's great when you find someone where you can literally let it go. Like you said, this is what I want. This is kind of what I'm thinking. Go do it. I think that's really exciting when you find people like that.
Yeah, and for sure, I've got they're great people and they're really skilled and experienced, so they're able to hear that and understand, you know, what how to present that. So that's been I've been very fortunate in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So, excitingly, we're going to be calling someone shortly. Have you had anything to do with Pip prior to this phone call?
Yeah, a little bit. When we got the permissions to do the show, I did reach out through Play Market to Pip because I wanted to have an opportunity to talk with her. So we have had a FaceTime, and that was really super just to hear her, the background to this play, why she wrote it, the research she'd done, and hear her perspective on things. So and hopefully, fingers crossed, she'll make it up to Auckland for our opening night.
That's really exciting.
A little terrifying, but also really exciting.
yeah. But, you know, when you think about all the Eurocentric plays that a lot of companies do, like, you can't reach out to Shakespeare and have a conversation with them, can you?
No, absolutely not. In fact, Tisadangi's next play is Oscar Wilde, and that's fantastic. But you can take such liberties and make edits, and every time I was, and Pip's been so great because she's like, oh, you know, let me know, and she's done some tweaks and all that sort of stuff. So it's really great working with the playwright and having their perspective, and no one can talk to Shakespeare and ask, what did he mean by that? But we have that luxury. It's been great to have Pip's input.
Now, for any of our listeners that maybe don't know Lopdow, because that's where you're performing, right?
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about the space. Like, has it got challenges?
It's a really cozy space. It's an 86-seater, I want to say. Comfy red chairs. Probably the biggest challenge is that there are some big pillars. Four pillars, two of them in the audience space and two on the stage. In actual fact, the pillars on the stage can actually be really used really beautifully. I've seen them used a lot in productions at Tisadangi over the years really well. But the pillars in the audience create some sightline issues, so you always have to sort of sit behind them in the seat that's just sort of angled behind the pillar and make sure they can still see everything, and they can. But that's probably the biggest challenge. It's a beautiful black brick back wall, which is really really interesting to look at.
Yeah.
It's a really old building detail in the back of the...
Got a pro arch, or is it just an open space?
Open space, and
that's beautiful in itself too, but also adds challenges when you're coming up with your concept as a director. How are we going to do things?
Yeah, well, I was really keen on seeing that wall, because the wall is lovely to look at, so we've got that in the design.
And I think what's really cool about shows at Tisadangi as well is the village and the food beforehand. So it's it's great for an actual full night out. Oh, meet for dinner, go to one of the cafes, have something to eat, and then wander 100%. Down the road. And there's great parking.
Yeah, there is now too. Yeah, there's a lot of good parking around the back of the theatre. It's a lively village. There's a restaurant above. The Titirangi Theatre has a bar, so they serve some good wine. And, yeah, it's really easy to make a good night of it.
Yeah, beautiful. All right, well, we're going to have a quick music break. And when we come back, as I've already alluded to, we're going to be talking with the writer of The 53rd Victim. So, next up, we have the latest from Danica Bryant, who, of course, we've played a lot before, but this is her latest called I'll Be Your Drag Queen. If you check this out, as I said, it was Danica Bryant, I'll Be Your Drag Queen. It's got a fantastic official music video to go with it, with a stunning drag queen featured in it. I was just saying that it's got a little bit of a Meghan Trainor-esque kind of sound about it. So, yeah, it's a great track. So, congratulations, Danica, on this latest single. So, crossing over now, or coming to us, I'm assuming that she's down in Dunedin at the moment. So, good evening, Pip.
Hello, yes, I am in Dunedin.
You are in Dunedin. Is it cold down there this evening?
Yes, but it's been a beautiful sunny day, like total blue skies still.
Ah, glorious. Now tell us, the 53rd Victim,
Yes.
What made you want to write this play?
So I was in London for one of my best mates' weddings and got tangled up in the actual London bombings.
Oh, wow.
So my husband at the time and I ended up wandering into King's Cross and this massive, like, sea of people, and it was, like, absolutely being in a moment of time. And then when I went back to New Zealand, I remember about a month later being at work in the Shortland Street storylining thing and someone coming in and reading the headline, which was about this New Zealand doctor who had been said to have helped on the bus, but had been questions were being asked, and that story was exposed, and I was like, that is a great material for a play.
So your writing isn't always based on fact?
No, usually it is based on some curiosity I have, where I'll have a question. So for 50 Third Victim, I was like, what must it have been like to be this woman who entirely kind of made up her life? So some of my material is definitely based on real things. Some of it is just completely fictionalized. And often it is me trying to work out like a particular life phase I'm in, and so it's kind of processing and reflecting back to find out what life's all about.
So how different or challenging is it writing something when there is actually a factual, researchable kind of element to, say, making something completely up from yourself?
In some ways, working with the truth is quite liberating because it gives you boundaries. And so, like, if someone said to me, just write a play, I would find that incredibly difficult because you could write about anything. Whereas if you are writing about the truth, you have good source material. And the thing I really enjoy about, so I've written quite a few biopics, for instance, is that the idea of researching, talking to real people, and then fictionalizing around that. So you'll never really know, like, what happens behind closed doors. So the idea of kind of getting to know these kind of real life characters enough that you could then imagine what had actually happened in those closed doors things.
And how long did this process on this particular play, how long was the writing process?
So I wrote it in 2008, and I think it took 2 or 3 years. Like, it was a well-supported play in terms of its development. Like, I got a grant from Creative New Zealand. It won a couple of awards that then accessed. Part of that was a stage reading. So I think we did 2 of those, which means that you work with the director and actors, you get to then put it in front of an audience, which is a really amazing kind of tool to test the material, because you get to see where people respond, where it might be a bit slow and boring, you might want to kind of trim that down, where people went in. So maybe two or three years, I'd say.
And by sounds of things, from what Catherine was saying earlier, having the connection to this particular production, it sounds like the writing hasn't stopped. You've been able to tweak a few things.
Yeah, well, so I do a lot of work in television, and one of the things that I really love about theatre is it's very fluid, I guess, and that each production you get an opportunity to revisit the script. Even in some productions, you are in rehearsals and you can tweak it on the rehearsal room floor, or you can go to the show and go, oh, actually, that scene's not really working, and maybe keep working on it. So I love how very alive theatre is. I think that's one of the real strengths of it.
So when you were writing this, did you have, what were your hopes and aspirations for it as a play? Like, as a writer, do you kind of think about where you hope it will go?
Yeah, I mean, I guess one of my things as a writer is I feel like it's my job and I'm interested in kind of exploring humanity. So it's really important to me that when I was working with this material that you just don't go, here's some crazy woman. Like, that we kind of empathise with her and we kind of go on this journey with her and what must it have been like, both being her but also being, like, in her circle and then kind of finding all of these kind of layers out. So I guess I really, on a kind of meta level, what I really am hoping the audience will do with this play and other plays, I guess, is A, they will learn something about the story and the characters, but I'm also hoping that, you know, with a really great theatre, I always think I learn something about myself. And I think about, has that been challenged about the way I think, or what have I learnt about myself in a way that reflects those characters? So I think, it's kind of all about connection to me.
And has writing always been something for you? Were you into writing when you were at school? Because I know a lot of writers kind of didn't really... I've talked to a few writers that school wasn't really a place for them to write.
No, well, I played a lot of sport, and actually my dad is a writer as well, so I kind of, I think, early up avoided it. And
yeah, did he drag you along to the theatre a lot as a youngster?
Oh, yeah. Not drag, because I really loved it.
Right.
I was a willing participant. So I guess a lot of that was deeply ingrained in my kind of DNA, just kind of waiting to come out. And then on a deeply pragmatic thing, I grew up in Dunedin, and then there's this expectation that when you finish school, you kind of, quote, go to university, but they never really teach you, like, what to study at university. So I really flunked out big time. Like, I failed law and economics and marketing and all of these kind of unmatched things. And then when I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to give drama a go, that's when it was a real natural fit. So that's when I'm like, oh, cool. And that's when I started writing. And I got a TV gig straight out of uni, and then that just kind of set the ball rolling, really.
So do you read a lot of other people's plays?
I go through phases, but yes, I absolutely am a huge advocate for reading scripts. I really enjoy them on their own, kind of, like, because I can see the kind of architecture plans that they are. And I think it's a really great way to see how different writers communicate. And I think, like, I've started, I do quite a lot of mentoring with new writers, and I always, always get them to just read a lot of scripts, because that's really how you learn about all of the kind of craft that often looks quite hidden. That's where you'll find it.
Yeah. I'm going to ask Catherine, actually, and I'll get you to answer this too, Pip, after Catherine does. Tell me, when you're reading a play, do you do all the voices in your head of all the different characters?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah?
Yeah, for sure. I try and imagine who they are, what they look like. I try and see it in my brain. I hear it very clearly, how I want things to sound. Yeah. How they should sound, yeah.
And when you're writing and going over things, Pip, do you kind of hear voices in your head?
Yeah, that's when I know the work is in flow. So with 53rd, I really had the strong sense that I had Rachel sitting on my shoulder and I was just channeling. Like, that's when writing is at its very best, that you feel like you're on a conduit and you're just scribing. So that's always exciting. That doesn't happen very often, so when it does happen, it's a great kind of ride. And I know with my writing that a character isn't quite working until their voice kind of turns itself on, and then I'm like, okay, now I'm on the right track.
Yeah, interesting, because, see, as a director myself, I sometimes used to find that reading a script by myself just didn't ever... Sometimes they really... Yeah, really grabbed me. But a lot of the time it wasn't till we did like a play reading, we had lots of voices and kind of listening to that interaction. But I think a lot of that came from high school, where I had an English teacher who used to do around the room reading with young girls who, some of us weren't great readers, and so everything was really boring to listen to. And it took me a long time to kind of get back after my university days into that passion of reading and loving reading plays and things. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So are you working on anything next, Pip?
I am starting to look at some new TV projects, but I'm kind of getting itchy theatre fingers or feet. I haven't written anything for the stage since, I think it was 2018 when I did that. I had the, I feel very grateful to have been given the stage rights to adapt Under the Mountain by Morris G. And that was actually the last thing I wrote for stage. So I will be exploring that, because I kind of feel like with AI and screens and all of the stuff, that live events are going to have more and more currency. So I'm like, yes, must get back in the theatre, must start writing something for that.
Catherine, is there anything that you would love a play to be written about?
Oh my goodness, what a question.
I know, it's a big question, but like if Pip was to say to you, I've got time to write a play about,
I have to say I love true stories. Truth is always stranger than fiction, and I love, because I love coming at it from an actor's point of view, like what motivates people to do the things they do, and this 53rd Victim is just a play about that, and it's why it's fascinated me. So anything that's true, where you just go, but why? Why would they do that? That's the kind of play I like. So, yeah, Pip, if you've got itchy fingers, really excited to see what you come up with next.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do love writing about true things. The other thing I'm quite fascinated with is the idea of kind of writing fiction around what-if kind of true events. So, you know, like if history was different, if a different person had won a battle or a different, you know, like... So that kind of thing. Really fascinates me.
Well, I think that's why, like for our listeners that are musical lovers, something like Anne Juliet, you know, take a Shakespeare and imagine if Romeo and Juliet didn't die and that there was a feminist viewpoint on it. And, I mean, that musical is taking off around the world.
Yeah, nice. What was the one that Jean Betts wrote? Was that Ophelia Thinks Harder? Great feminist take on Hamlet.
Yeah.
So I guess that would be maybe a genre of alternative realities, I guess, maybe. But so that's, I'm really interested in that kind of taking historical figures or events and then kind of fictionalising a what-if alternative reality.
Very cool.
Yeah, very cool.
All right, so I'm just trying to think what other questions we might like. Is there anything actually, Catherine, that... Now that Pip's on the line, I mean, I know you've said that you've had a few backwards and forwards, but is there anything that you would like to tell her about your take on the play, or anything that you would like to have the opportunity to say to her as the writer?
Well, I'll say thank you for the meticulous research that Pip, you've done. But as we do it on the floor, we make more and more discoveries, as you always do. You go deeper into it, and then you realise the connections that Pip's drawn. Little moments get recycled or repeated back, and it's not till you hear that a few times you realise it. So some very clever writing in there. Thank you, Pip.
It's
the
job, welcome.
Really easy. But so as we go through, we're just finding more and more little gems like that, where you go, that more realisation. Comes through. We've been joking that this is potentially the kind of play that you might want to see twice, because once all the truth is out, then you want to go back and watch all the bits and how that unfolds itself with the knowledge that you fully have.
So maybe you need to do a ticketing deal for coming back the second time, you get a discount or something.
Come back on a second ticket discount.
Like, well, yeah, why not?
Great idea, Emma.
Because the second person that comes may also bring someone new with them.
It's like a sixth sense discount, right?
It's exactly a sixth sense. Yeah, that's exactly right.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we really appreciate you coming, being able to speak to us tonight, Pip. It's been really great to be able to speak to not only the director of the show, but also to speak to the writer.
My pleasure. It's really nice to chat about the work. Thank you.
Yeah. And I'll let you pop off, Pip. So thank you so much.
All good. Thank you.
Thanks, Pip.
Bye.
So when does the show open?
The 19th of August. It's a Tuesday night, so it's two weeks from Tuesday.
Yeah, so where are you at in the process at the moment?
Oh, well, we have got a couple more rehearsals, and then we start our technical rehearsals in a week, and then we've got dress rehearsals in the final week. So we're actually in a really good place. We were doing a little bit of techie stuff with quite a good soundscape we've got going, so we're working on a little bit of that today. We're kind of pulling together all the final threads of things, but a costume, sound, set design. So we're in a really good shape, and I think once we get into our dress rehearsals, we'll be flying. Yeah, really excited.
Do you have a most exciting part of the process? Like, what's the bit that is the most exciting for you?
Two places, actually. I've really enjoyed the beginning of it, where you sit down with the actors and you talk about who these people are, what are their backstories, how you play them best. So you have that kind of initial discussion where you shape up the world. And what's starting to happen now is that the actors have got their books down, they know their lines, 99% of them, and they're really just starting to take flight. And that's been really exciting to watch, because when you know your lines, when you know where you're going and what you're saying, what you're doing, then you really start to just elevate your performance into a new place. And all of that initial work we talked about way back when, weeks ago, about, you know, who is she, where's she from, what's their story, all of that stuff just kind of somehow bubbles to the surface. And it's really exciting to watch an actor just kind of just take flight like that. It's really cool.
Yeah. Have you ever been involved in the same show more than once? So, like, done a different season of it, or worked with a different director on a show or anything?
Oh gosh, you're asking me to really cast my mind back, because I haven't done acting in about a decade. So
I'm only asking because it'll be very interesting to see if, because this is, you know, your first time directing for so long, whether when you're watching it, I'm always fascinated by those moments of, oh, I like how I did that, but if I was to do it again, yes, I might.
Oh, look, no doubt I'll be watching this in the, like, you know, the last couple of shows and going, I probably could have done that better, or I should have done, or I wish, you know. But in the time, I'm just, I'm really loving just being in the moment and not thinking too hard about the things to do differently. I'll worry about that in the next show. But so much learning from this one that that's got my brain pretty full at the moment.
If you could give a bit of advice to a first-time director, what would it be?
We're in this because we love it. Mm-hmm. So surround yourself by people that you are going to have a good time with.
Oh, I like that. Oh, yeah.
People that you trust and that you can work well with. So I had a director once tell me that 90% of the job was casting, and the other 10% was making sure that people were going in and outside the right entrances. And and I've changed my mind a little bit on that 10%, like which entrance you come in and out of. But I absolutely nailed the 90% of casting really well. I've got such a great team. They're just really, really good, lovely people. They're working hard. They're really talented. And that plus the designers makes me feel like I've just assembled a really good bunch of people. So when you get that right, then it's not just a great show, but it's a good time.
Yeah, and you kind of have to go with your gut too, don't you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Because sometimes I think you can overthink the casting, you know, because it's such a jigsaw puzzle too. Because if you give that person that role, well, then that person doesn't work in that role. So if we change it round and da 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 da, and you, like, you can drive yourself insane.
And then you multiply that by the fact you've got 31 different characters and six, maybe four, five or six people to fill them, then you're absolute jigsaw puzzle. But I'm a jigsaw puzzler fan from way back, so...
I was just going to say, are the parts... Like, is it actually written to be multi-rolled or can it be played with... Right.
Yep.
And do they tell you who the multiple roles are? Like, is there... or do you have to decide
how it... No, was not that prescriptive. She said it could be played up to this many. So I was pretty open in what I was willing to go with. I had sort of an ideal scenario of six with multiple age ranges and genders. So I was really kind of open to see who was available and could come along, and then managed to kind of find the scenario I had worked towards. So that was really cool.
Oh, look, this show just sounds fantastic and people definitely need to get along. So business end... Sell the show to our listeners. Where do they go? Where do they find out? Where do they book tickets?
Yeah, so you can book tickets on the Titirangi Theatre website. It opens on the 19th of August, runs for 2 weeks to the 30th of August. We have a couple of matinees, so if evening time's not your thing, it was a 4 p.m. show on a Saturday and a Sunday. I don't know the ticket prices, sorry, off the top of my head.
No, that's completely fine. So you can jump over to our Kick Arts website as well. We've got it on our events page there as well.
Brilliant.
But your best place to go is Titirangi's website.
Yeah, absolutely.
So have you got anything lined up for the rest of the year, or are you taking a break after this one?
Well, the next show that Titirangi is doing is an Oscar Wilde, as I mentioned earlier, and I'm just quite keen to have a go at auditioning for that and see if I can turn my hand now to a little bit of turn of the century English.
Do you think after directing that when you go back to acting that it might be a little bit different for you now?
I think I'll have a lot more appreciation for the work of the director, but I will also enjoy sitting back and just not having any of those other worries on my shoulders and just focusing on my role and my acting performance. So fingers crossed I'll have a go at that, but either way I'm really looking forward to seeing that one too.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming in. As you said, you've been rehearsing today, so to come in on Sunday evening and sit here, we really appreciate it, and we really look forward to hearing how the show goes.
Thank
so
you.
You know, Titirangi are great Kick Arts supporters. Now we're going to have a music break. This is the latest single from Mel Parsons called Be Here Now. was Mel Parsons' Be Here Now. So, in that music break, I've had a bit of a switcheroonie and brought some new people into the studio. Well, kind of new. It's someone that's been here a few times before, but not for a while. So, welcome back to the studio, Quinn from Tiptronic Productions.
I'm back.
You are back. So, finally. And you brought a friend with you.
I brought one of my new dancers to the company this year, Maurice.
Hello.
She's a part of our new part-time program that we started up this year.
Cool.
She's an absolute legend.
So this isn't Pit Crew, this is another program?
Yeah, so this is kind of like the next step after Pit Crew, if they wanted to take that instead of going to Australia or anything like that. So it's a mixture of dancers. We've got 8 of them this year. They're all stupidly strong. The youngest being 16, and then you and Annabelle, like 22,
yeah,
right? 22, old. 23?
Yeah.
Old. Not. And they're just really focused on honing in all those last little things you need to either go pro straight away or before you wanted to go try anything overseas, training-wise. It's been a great time. A whole like different level of training and program to organize on top of Pit Crew at the same time.
Mm.
But it's been really nice to do it during the day on a Tuesday.
I was just going to say to you, is this a kind of during the day type thing?
Yeah, it's
thing?
A Tuesday thing. 8:30 to 2:30 we train. Yeah.
So for the 16-year-old, who I'm assuming is still at school, does that mean they have a day off school to come to you?
Yeah, so there's 3 of them that are still in school and they all worked between me and their school and their families to figure out how that works. Like, one uses Gateway as like the link to it, one just went, I'm doing this, bye. And the other got, you know, a million signatures under the sun that the kids have to get a private school and all that kind of stuff to get out for a day. And it's been working quite well. They haven't had too many stresses with assignments except for the last few weeks.
Great.
Where one of them's just lost the plot a little bit. That's all right.
And I suppose it would be the same for you then too, being a little bit older. That means a day that you can't work.
Yes. Yeah, my work has been super flexible with it as well. But it is quite good because I think a lot of us, we're all kind of in a similar realm where we're teaching dance as well, so or teaching in one way or the other, but after school hours. So it works that we have like the course during the day and then we go off to teaching from there. So it works quite well time wise.
So whereabouts do you teach?
Well, I teach for Perform as well. And occasionally for Red Studios and just like other little random things here and there wherever I can pick up. But I'm also a teacher aide at a high school as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm very busy doing a lot of stuff, but this is priority, so it's good.
You kind of need to, though, do a lot of stuff to get that money behind you and things, though, because training as in any kind of performing art is not cheap.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah, it's getting more and more expensive as the years go on, to be honest.
Yeah.
It gets worse.
Yeah. So you've got this day program going on. You've still got Pit Crew. You're still doing your national competition, and now you've thrown something else into the mix with this show that you've got on in a couple of weeks.
Sure have.
It doesn't stop.
No. So it's our third theatre show now.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done Driveline, last year was Hydraulica, and this year is Pneumatics. Continuing kind of on the same kind of show pattern as what the last two have. So Driveline was that whole mind, body, ground, soul vibe. Last year went more deep into a more personal story. And then this year is kind of more of a reflection on my whole life kind of thing in a dance way. Tapping on my life as a kid growing up in dance, then the pathways through that, all the stuff that happens along the way, especially in the arts. And then finishing on kind of where I'm at now, career-wise with everything I do and how I have my, you know, fingers in different baskets and all that kind of thing, and style-wise where I am as well. And the show really taps into, I guess, the range of genres I work in, as well as the choreographers we've got in the show. And then the part-timers have also choreographed routines, which has been really cool. So I've been working closely with them and their little pairs, making some choreo, which has been really cool. And they've all done a really good job, which has been really exciting.
So tell us who some of the choreographers are, because there's quite a list of them.
Yeah, there's a good list this year. So the professional choreographers we have Tejal Hari, Maria Raske, Eve Sorensen, Joseph Arce,
Rebecca
Schoenbeck, me. I think that's all of them.
Midi.
Midiana Wetere Rider. I always forget one, but I feel like that was all of them. There's not as many guest choreographers as what we usually have because the part-timers took up another 4 slots.
Great.
Which is really cool. So I only choreographed half the show this year, which is actually way better than 3/4 and then directing and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, so it means that you can step out. You can actually step back and go,
yeah,
what does the big overall arching
picture
look like?
Especially with adding in a lot of physical elements this year. We've scaled it up quite literally. We've got a set. We've got moving risers. We've got a whole other level of chaos to add to it, which is really exciting. But it's meant I've had to go beyond just the choreo and the direction now. I've had to add in these physical things I have to think about so much harder, which we spent some time on a month ago, and that was a challenge, but it's getting there, and we don't see them again till pack in, which is kind of stressful, but it's going to be fine.
So how long have you given yourself to pack in?
So we've got a set build day, which is the Thursday leading up to the show, for them to build everything and set it up and do the lighting and blah, blah, blah. Then we have Friday, which is our tech rehearsal day, finish off the lighting plot and really getting into the set and the risers and playing around with all that. And then show's Saturday, off we go, and Sunday.
So what's it been like for you being a part of all of this?
Oh my gosh, it's just like organized chaos that I love being a part of. But no, it's very cool. I think it's cool for me because I have never been a part of a kind of production company like this before, where I feel like the sole focus is like your career as a dancer and like your future from here, whereas I'm quite used to being in, you know, little studios where you're working towards the recital at the end of the year, I guess, and not like your actual dance career and future. So it's been very cool, and to be a part of, like, I don't know, just the intensive trainings and everything, and yeah, the show trainings are so cool, and like we're all becoming quite good friends as well, which is nice. Yeah.
Right. So where did dance start for you?
I was 9. Started up here.
9's a little bit older too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a hip-hop girl, so I still am a hip-hop girl.
She's always be a hip-hop girl.
Always hip-hop girl at heart.
Feet of a prima ballerina.
Yeah. Yes. Which my dad gave me, which is so random.
That's random.
I know, it's so weird. But I started up here with Auckland West Dance Academy, and then I did some stuff with the Palace, and I just kind of like moved around a little bit, and then I did my degree in Hamilton and majoring in psychology and minoring in dance. And then we finished our degrees, all my friends, and then everybody went off into their big girl jobs, and I was like, I'm going to go to Auckland and dance. So that's what I done. But I was still teaching the whole time as well, for street dance sessions in Hamilton, and now I'm just like exploring the scene up here and trying to navigate the world of Auckland and dance and work and money and life all at once.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Put
like everybody
in,
else.
Yes.
Good old 22-year-old stuff.
Yep.
Crazy.
Yes.
And Quinn, how many studios are you working for these days?
I regularly work for one. Shocker. That's Co-Evolve down in Pukekohe. And then kind of on rotation at Red Studios, working with the troops and the commercial classes. But most of my time is spent with Pit Crew, the part-time program, Velocity, and all the other events that I do, and just curry jobs, traveling, doing curry for workshops, for commercial work, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And tell us how Velocity is going. You know, we talked about it when you first kicked
it's
off.
It's going.
Is it 3 years now?
This is
4 years.
Fifth year of Velocity.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's gone international this year. So we went to Melbourne for a regional this year. That went amazing. Definitely be back next year. We're probably going to add a second Aussie one, looking at Gold Coast or potentially Perth. If I can find the time to fly to Perth to look for a venue.
I was just going
to
say Perth
and then come
so
back.
Far to go.
But the dance scene in Perth is ridiculous. And because they're like so pushed off to the side, quote unquote, they've got a lot less experiences coming into Perth.
Mm-hmm.
So the option of exploring that has been really cool. But I think it's come up to about 15 events this year for Velocity.
Gosh.
And grand finals is a whole day longer this year, which is wild. And we're doing grand finals at Q Theatre, which is going to be really cool. Just giving all the dancers a nice big professional space to perform on instead of just like a local hired out space for a theatre. So going into like, you know, one of the headlining theatres in Auckland, it's going to be very exciting.
And it also means, I think, something that's really exciting about your competition growing is it gives the opportunity for professionals to adjudicate and actually have paid work, right?
Yeah, I've worked really hard to have a nice little, I guess, circle of judges that I continuously rely on that I can give at least one event to every year. Potentially there might be a little bit more because I'm changing how we work through the judges next year. But it also means because I have 15 events to choose from in a year, I can start working with like this bunch and start bringing them through into another skill, which is judging, which is a bloody big job. Mm. And lots of people and their like hopes and dreams rely on you as a judge sometimes because they want that feedback and they want to feel that connection and the verification from it. So being able to start training them into that space as well is going to be good for their resume, but also some work for them and people I know I can trust also and that I can like pass on the work to and just be very comfortable with it, which is exciting.
Cool. Have you had, have you ever had negative experiences with a judge? Or a positive experience that you remember maybe?
Well, actually, it's funny. I actually did Velocity when I when just like didn't know each other.
No.
And we got, what did our team get? Our team got
high scoring something or other.
Scoring or something.
Is that at finals?
I think so.
Yeah, it was a finals. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. And I was actually an assistant teacher and a student at the time as well. So that was cool to be a part of. But yeah, no, there's been like recently actually a project this year.
Oh, yes.
Because I dance for Red Studios for Republic, our mega crew. We got $10,000. So that was pretty cool. For winning the mega crew division. So yeah, that was cool.
So does, if you win mega crew and you win money like that, does it go back to the studio or do you guys get anything?
Has Carrie figured it out yet?
That was the discussion. And then we all sat in a circle and we're like, where's the money going to go? And some people said a vending machine for the studio and stuff like that.
Oh my God, that'd be a dream.
It would, but no. It's going to go towards a trip to Australia for House of Champions competition. So
that's
it goes back into us,
that's
which is nice. Yeah.
It's nice that it goes back into you guys rather than, I shouldn't say just the studio, because, I mean, you wouldn't have been in the competition without a studio, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
we make it to the studio, go back to the kids in some way, shape or form anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, and even if it was,
especially if it's,
it's going to go back into a really cool new uniform or something that you don't have to pay for. I love that, a vending machine that you still have to put your money in, though.
Yeah, it's so true.
So, and depending on the contract with the vending machine, you might not get a single cent back out of it, which is so weird.
Crazy. Hey, well, we're going to take a quick music break now. We are going to listen to a track from Kiwi artist Janine, and it is called Make You Proud.
I just want to make you proud of me. Spend all my life chasing moments. Wish that I would have moved slow. Now I'm falling, but I'm going nowhere. And I'm taking all the things I know. The life I had planned is over. Don't know what I'm going to now. You were meant to be in every moment. Now I gotta start again somehow. And I just wanna make you proud. Now that you're not around. Promise I'll take care of mom, cause that's what you would've done, and make you proud of me. Running from myself, I don't think it's healthy, but I would run the whole world just to feel like you're still with me, and pretend that one day I'd have a family, you would still be them grow with me, but the life I had planned is over. Don't know what I'm going to now. You were meant to be in every moment. Now I gotta start again somehow. I just wanna make you proud. Now that you're not around, I promise I'll take care of mom, cause that's what you were.
Hello, puppy. I see you waving at me.
I just want you back now. I just want you back. Give all that I have to see you smile again.
such a lovely place. A few visitors today, not as many as when Mum and I last came here, but it's very, very beautiful. If you listen, you'll hear the birds and the trees. Beautiful spot. It's been a little while, probably since you've seen a duck, hasn't it? Not too many ducks in Hollywood.
What a cool closing line. Not too many ducks in Hollywood. I am loving tonight that the songs that I'm using, as our listeners know, I love getting songs down from new hatchlings, which is Kiwi Hatchlings on Spotify. It's all Kiwi music. You can see literally the songs I've played tonight dropped in the on Friday, so they're only 2 days new, old, they're new. But anyway, they've all got really cool music videos. I've actually been enjoying watching different music videos, and that one had some beautiful scenery in it of different forests and things. But anyway, I digress. Let's get back to our guests in studio. So tell us a little bit about the process of this show. How's it all? I mean, you've said that it's kind of in sections about different parts of your life. How does something about your life translate into dances by other people?
So it's been a weird one to figure out. So the inspiration with this show, in comparison to last year, took a while to hit me, because last year just like hit me like a ton of bricks and the show literally just like fell out of my brain.
Yeah.
This year I started Cory and I was like, what the hell am I going to do? How am I going to structure this? So I just started throwing routines at them and I was like, something will work somewhere and I'll make it work because I have to. And eventually it kind of spun together that it would make sense to go from the really personal story we had last year and then go back onto, I guess, what kind of led me to that terrible experience happening and then the follow off after it. And the section structure, so we always do four sections just to create some structure. So this year we have explore, create, transform, express. And that came from my like huge tattoo I have on my arm. Those four emblems I have mean that in that exact order. So that kind of weirdly just fell together for a section structure. Explore kind of sits in the early days of, you know, primary school and dance and bullying and touches on a few of those kind of little topics. As you do as a young little male dancer, create taps into that like 10 to 15 area where I was like, what the hell am I doing with my life? People are telling me what to do. I don't quite like that vibe, but I just got to follow it because you could trust the process. And then transform is that kind of like pre-professional area, which is where a lot of the dancers in the show sit in pit crew and part-time. They sit in that transform area. So a lot of the routines in that section touch on that finding of new stuff and developing style and versatility and genre and finding themselves as people. There's a few routines that kind of touch on that future exploration idea. And then Express, the last one, just more sits in where I'm at now with my work and what I do and all that kind of stuff. And that one has a lot of their part-timer routines, which is also kind of cool that it's thrown those routines in that mix because of that's what I do a lot of. I mentor these dancers and help bring them into the careers now. And then the finale, which has some really cool surprises, plays on just literally where I'm at right now.
Cool.
Which is really exciting. It's a very fun finale. So, yeah, I'm not going to say anything else about it, though.
So being in the show and in the process, because you're obviously only in parts of the process, what's that like? Kind of lots of little moments of isolation?
Well, yeah, there is a bit of that, but it's also like I'm in almost the whole show, so it's like, don't stop dancing. But I think it's cool to kind of, because as much as Quinn says it's about him as a dancer and like his process of finding himself in dance and all of that, it's very much just reflective of all of our experiences as dancers and our journey in like kind of exploring more professional dance and where that can take us as well. So I think as much as it is like telling the story of Quinn's life, it's actually like telling the story of all of our journeys in a way, which is really beautiful. And it actually like almost, I think it relates quite nicely to anybody that's watching the show as well, because it's not just as a dancer, it's as a person too.
Yeah, that was the fun part, was making it very reflective for literally anyone, because you could apply the same story to any profession, I guess.
Yeah.
And very human.
So,
yeah, very real. Yeah.
When you say professional dance, what do you think is the difference between professional dance and non-professional dance?
Well, I think, well, that's what I moved up here for, right? So I wanted to, I found that a lot of my experience in dance has been like just not, it's not quite scratched the itch that I have to like really take it that next step. And I think working with Quinn, it's like been that whole new realm of just like the level of training we do, the type of production he's even putting on. Like this is a production. This is not just like a show that you know, fundraising.
She's not cheap.
Like, no, she's not cheap. but like we've got the full on platforms and everything. Yeah. And I think the quality is just that next level.
Mm-hmm.
As a dancer and as somebody that's training, and for the people that I think will be watching, you'll be able to just, it's like completely different from any other studio show, I guess. Yeah.
And where do you hope to go with dance after? So this year, as we said when we were in that music break, this year's going really fast for you.
Yeah.
What's the plan for you at the end of this year?
Quinn? No, I'm still figuring that out. It's a journey, right? And that's why I'm here and what I'm trying to figure out at the moment. And I think the thing with this type of journey is it's not just going to like fall on your lap. Like you've really got to, it's like a step-by-step process, and opportunities will come as they come, but you've got to be connected with the right people. So that's where what I'm trying to build right now. And I think I've done well with Quinn so far.
Sure.
He's
have.
A tick. So I'm trying to figure that out. But I think ideally I'd love to do some like dance overseas, or just any opportunity that comes my way. I'm like,
yep,
do it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So if there was a young, well, not necessarily a young dancer, if there was a dancer listening tonight who was like going, oh, where do I go to next? What would your piece of advice be to them?
Well, obviously with Quinn. But I think, no, genuinely, I do think that though, because I think it's not just like we're working towards a show and that's it. Like we're actually, he's building our careers in a way. And I think for Quinn, it's like, I mean, we were just discussing it. It's not like a 9-to-5 for him. Like this is like your life. Like you are so dedicated to making our futures as well as yours. So yeah, the dedication from him is just like next level. Like we're definitely with the right person.
I hope you're taking management fees for the, you know, maybe that's what the next thing. Maybe you need to set up a dance.
I've had a few people talk about management and agency things to me.
Mm.
I'm like, oh my gosh.
Well, I mean, it's another whole
thing. Maybe in the future.
It's another whole thing. But as we're hearing, you are mentoring, you are, you know, you're becoming a go-to person in New Zealand where if dance shows need dancers, like, you know a lot of them, you're going to, you know, so to be able to say, come to me, you know, it could be another string to your bow, and also somewhere for some of your alumni to be able to also feed in and stay connected and involved.
Yeah, definitely.
Very cool. So if there are young dancers, I'm now looking in Quinn's direction, listeners. It might sound like I'm asking the same thing. If there are young dancers listening and going, how do I get to be a part of Quinn's stuff? How do they?
Well, so once the show is wrapped up and we go into the last part of the year, which for them is video projects and showreels and that kind of stuff, in about October, I open up auditions for the next intake of both Pit Crew and the part-time program. And there's a cool name pending for part-time program. Stay tuned. It's been the talk for the last few months.
Exhaust.
Close.
Because he exhausts
you. We haven't discussed that one. That's
what I love. Exhaust would be kind of funny. Anyway, so we open up auditions in October. And they're all just online auditions. So dancers will just submit two or three videos, completely up to them, contrasting genres, demonstrating what they can. There's like a short little questionnaire just to get to know them a bit better. And then I'll jump in and yes, no, all that kind of good stuff, and then we kick off very early in Feb, if not late Jan, depending on how the term structure falls, and you get to join the party and all this chaos that we enjoy doing.
Crazy. So we're coming to the end of the night, but I just want to ask you a couple of questions, kick arts type questions. So first of all, what are you hoping as a dancer that people leaving the theatre after the 16th or the 17th are saying or thinking? So as the dancer,
yes,
what do you hope people sitting in the Q Theatre bar are talking about?
That's a big one. I hope that people leave and they feel like they went on their own journey in watching the show as well. Like, as much as it is like Quinn's journey and our journey as dancers, it's also, like I say, reflective of anybody that's watching. Like, you can relate in your own way, and I maybe hope that people can choose a part of the four sections to connect to. Like, it's so many different sections of life as well as dance, and then maybe they can leave and think, well, that was awesome. That made me think a little bit about something that's going on for me. Like, some of the pieces are quite emotional.
Oh,
like,
yeah, there's some tear-jerkers.
But then, like, the next one is just, like, 365 Putty Girl. Like, it's just, like, we cover all realms. So I think, yeah, it's, like, a full experience. So, yeah.
Very cool. So, Quinn, where can people find out more? Get involved.
Here we
Buy tickets.
Well, all over our social media is, I guess, the easiest place to go now. So either on my Instagram, Quinn Edmonds, or Tiptronic Productions, or the 45 dancers in the show. There's a whole bunch of them. Feel free to go find them and stalk them and follow them and all that kind of good stuff. Or literally just heading onto the Q Theatre website, searching up Pneumatics under the dance category of their beautiful website and get some tickets. We don't have many left. We're getting close to selling out again.
Well, that's
really
exciting.
It's
to
very
have
exciting.
Three sold out shows
that'll be
in
amazing.
That theatre. That's amazing.
Last year we had two, so I've been really, you know, hoping that we can reach at least two again. If not three, that'll be insane. But we're nearly there. Our Saturday show at 6 PM, 7 PM?
7 PM.
7 PM. Well, that's go me. Has like 17 tickets left. And then our two Sunday shows both.
2 PM and 7 PM.
That's the one.
She's onto it.
She is. Emma's always onto it. Those two Sunday shows are just under 100 each now, which is really exciting.
That is so awesome. Listen, Quinn, it's been great having you back in the studio. As I said, you haven't been here for a little while.
No.
So I'm really excited to find out maybe who gets into pit crew or part-time study, part-time, whatever
part-time
the new name's going to be.
Yeah.
Next year. And to find out how everything goes. And we wish you all the best with your future as well. And maybe you'll be in here promoting something for Quinn in the future as well. So that's the end of it, guys. I've got through another night by myself. Thanks, Stephen, for being in Tauranga. I hope rehearsals are going well. I can't wait to see you soon. As you know, we've got our project coming up in October with the double bill of the big one, O Junior and Newsies Junior. So get your kids enrolled for a great holiday program. If you've got something going on in your life in the arts, remember, send us an email at info@kickarts.org.nz. Now, we're going out tonight with another brand new single from a Kiwi musician. This is Georgia Lines with Till the Music Stops. So a big reminder from me, as we always say, go out there and kick some arts.
Between a lost and a found, suspended with my feet off the ground, I'm twisting and I'm turning, I'm breathing but breathing without. Holding on to gossamer string, but this web is not as strong as it seems. I'm spinning and I'm turning, I'm learning what I'm doing without. suspended. Leave me dancing till the penny drops. I'll be dreaming till the music stops. I'm twisting and I'm turning. I'm learning what I'm doing without. If I stay, if I walk away, we both lose a limb. Either way, there's no escape. So leave me here to rest in peace, my disbelief suspended.
Stars saying,